Thank you, Will. We are grateful to have President Clark with us and Brother Broadhead, our academic vice president, and also Brother John Ivers, the Dean of the College of Language and Letters. We see many faculty and employees and administrators. We're grateful to have you with us. As always, students, we're grateful to have you in our forums. It will now be my privilege to introduce Brother Gladding, Samuel T. Gladding to you. Can we call you Brother Gladding? We have his permission. Dr. Samuel T. Gladding is chair and professor in the Department of Counseling at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He currently serves as a fellow in the American Counseling Association and formerly served as the president of this association. He also continues to work as a licensed professional counselor. Dr. Gladding received his degrees from Wake Forest University and Yale and the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. He began his counseling career as director of children's services at the Rockingham County Mental Health Center in Wentworth, North Carolina. Before joining the Department of Counseling, Dr. Gladding was an assistant to the president and associate provost at Wake Forest. Dr. Gladding has taught counseling and worked with universities in Turkey, Estonia, Austria, Malaysia, Sweden, South Africa, Australia, and Canada. He has also served on the faculties at Fairfield University in Connecticut and the University of Alabama at Birmingham before coming to Wake Forest. He was a first responder to the 9/11 attack in New York City in 2001, providing psychological first aid to families of victims killed in the Twin Towers. Dr. Gladding was also a first responder to the shootings at Virginia Tech. In 2007, he was honored by the American Counseling Association with the Gilbert and Kathleen Wren Award for a humanitarian and caring person. Dr. Gladding spent 3 weeks with a group of his own students living and working and learning from Mother Teresa. Dr. Gladding has authored numerous professional publications, including 36 books. In 1999, he was cited as being in the top 1% of contributors to the flagship journal of counseling, the Journal of Counseling and Development. He and his wife, Claire, are the parents of 3 children. Please join me in welcoming Samuel T. Gladding to BYU Idaho.
It's an honor to be here, and I love your campus and all of what I've met of your students and faculty, first class by any standard. But you didn't invite me here to praise you. You invited me to speak to you of what I know and what I have a passion for. So let me do that. I feel like, if I can use an Idaho analogy, I feel like I have about 10 pounds of potatoes and about a 5-pound span of time. So I'm going to stuff them in as quickly as I can, and hopefully they won't get mashed, and we will have something productive in the end. So let's get started. This is a presentation on altruism. And it starts with a little lyric from Jack Johnson on Where Did All the Good People Go? You may or may not know who the singer is, but his lyric is this. Where did all the good people go? I've been changing channels. I don't see them on the TV shows. Where did all the good people go? We got heaps and heaps of what we sow, meaning we don't always have good things, I think. So let me talk about altruism in our society, in the world, and in the world in which we live. And one of the things that I want to do and hope to do is not be like this man here in that I'm about to show you in regard to his early life. And that's B.F. Skinner. Now, I admire B.F. Skinner because he was a very good behavioral psychologist. But you may or may not know, when B.F. Skinner basically graduated from college, he went to New York City. His intent was to be a writer. And he even received encouragement from Robert Frost and other great writers of the time. But B.F. Skinner, after a year, gave up writing because he said, I had nothing to say. I hope I have something to say and that I'm not going to imitate or emulate B.F. Skinner in that regard. I'd love to imitate or emulate him professionally. Great man. So let me tell you, I was once in the Army, and the Army will always tell you what you're going to do before you do it. They'll always tell you what you did when you're doing it, and they'll always tell you what you did after you did it. And so I wanted to tell you what to expect, and also that when 10 of 3 hits, that you will be free to go to your 3 o'clock classes if you have them. You'll also be free to stay around for some questions and answers if you don't have a 3 o'clock. So we're going to talk about what's altruism, why it's important, the biological basis, the religious faith in altruism, studies on altruism, barriers to altruism, ways of promoting altruism, and then we're going to conclude. So hang on, here we go. So what's altruism? Why is it important? And I'll try to visually represent this too, because I think it's just important to speak to learning in many, many different ways. So altruism, if you can sum it up in 7 words, here are the words. Unselfish concern for the welfare of others. Unselfish, well, the you comes before the I. Coincidental, yes. Significant, yes. It's talking about unselfishness, putting others before ourselves. Why is it important? Why is it important? Why would altruism be important to put to be unselfish and to serve others? Well, it's important for a lot of reasons. But one of those reasons is the fact that all of our caring professions of counseling, medicine, nursing, ministry, teaching, psychology, social work, you name it, claim it, all of those are really based on people being altruistic. I would also say that our commerce system is based on altruism, if it's really a good system. And so is parenting, friendship, family life. They're all based on altruism. It's an important thing that we have in our lives. And we wouldn't want to go to a physician and have that physician say something to us to the effect like, why are you here? You know, you got a cold? Okay, well, get over it. We want that physician to be caring. We want that person to be caring. Same with commerce, banking, etc. We need altruism in our society if it's going to be a good society and if it's going to be a great society. There are a lot of quotes on altruism, and I'm not going to read all of these to you because that would take a little too long. But I would say to you that the one by Albert Pike, who's not that well known, the third one down, that what we've done for others and the world remains and is immortal, I think is an important quote on altruism, as is the quote by Mother Teresa and the quote by Martin Luther King, that the light of creative altruism, what people have a choice of walking that way or walking in the darkness of selfishness, and that's destructive. There's if you're saying to yourself, self, is there a biological basis to altruism? You've come to the right place. That's Jane Goodall, if you remember her, or even want to know about her. Good person. And I don't know the person on the right, but or the creature on the right. But there's a lot of biological basis for altruism. You do not need to read all this. Let me just tell you the importance of this slide, the survival of the nicest. Samuel Boyles, who's used to teach at Harvard and who did his work also at Santa Fe Institute, basically says there is a group selection for altruism, that there's a genetic component to it. And that when you study hunter-gatherer societies, even contemporary society, we find that those groups that are improved are related, or that do well, are related to one another, and that they improve the overall fitness of the group by being altruistic with the group. That's the importance of this slide. Way too many words. Altruism and evolution. Well, some anthropologists now argue that after years of evolution that we're hardwired for altruism, not for self-interest. There are books on this, including The Age of Empathy by Franz De Waal. And basically, De Waal is saying, we're group animals, highly cooperative, sensitive to injustice, sometimes warmongering, but mostly peace-loving. And I think he's right. But we'll talk about situations where people forget their altruism and how we can avoid doing that, if you will. There are also other studies. I won't go through all of these. But even going back into the 1940s, W.C. Ollie basically was saying, the forces are biological. In the long run, he's basically saying, we're group-centered. We're more altruistic than we are otherwise. And his last quote there, I think, is important, that our tendencies toward goodness are innate as our tendencies toward intellect. We could do well with more of both intellect and altruism. So, again, more, and I won't keep going into that, but I will give you this last slide biologically, because I know there's some biology majors here. Basically, when we talk about altruism, if you look at the first and last sentences here, we're hardwired to work together, whether that means being led or leading. And toward the last, behaviors designed around self-interest would have us living like orangutans, as solitary creatures. We're not orangutans, nor do we want to be, because we do better as a group and working in a group and being good to one another in good ways. So let's talk a minute, since we know there's a lot of data out there on the biological basis of altruism. Let's talk for a minute about religion and altruism. An important concept, I think, and one that I think is of interest to us all. Basically, if you look at world religions, and I've just picked three right here, and I'm going to pick Christianity after these three. Basically, they are talking about love and compassion and creation and conditions of faith. Buddhism, Judaism, Islam, basically talking about being altruistic as a part of their faith-based experience, of their worship experience. If we look at Christianity, which, again, I think is important, we find that altruism is central to the teachings of Jesus, and it can be found throughout the Gospels. Just a couple of examples, the Sermon on the Mount, the Sermon on the Plains. I've given you the resources if you like to look those up in Matthew and in Luke. But altruism is a vital part of Christian faith, of our Christian faith. One of the things that we can say, though, about altruism and faith and Christianity and religious faith is that it seems to reinforce altruism. It's not the origin necessarily of altruism, but I would much rather have someone who has a religious faith and who is altruistic than someone who's just altruistic. I think it adds a deeper, better quality, a dimension that would not be there otherwise. And I don't know if you would agree or not, but I think I've seen that enough to say it's more true than not true. Let's look for a minute at altruistic studies. Abraham Lincoln had an interesting quote that it's not quoted that often, but I found it. He says, when I do good, I feel good. And if Lincoln could say that, I bet many of us could say that also. But there are a lot of altruistic studies or studies on altruism that are out there. So for you guys, and for this one is especially important, the display of altruism or selflessness toward others are seen by females as the most attractive trait in partners. Okay? Let me repeat that with feeling. The display of altruism and selflessness is seen by females as the most attractive trait in partners. So you're saying to yourself, self, would I ever attract one of these beautiful BYU Idaho women toward me? Be altruistic. You get the message. And you can say to others in your residence halls or otherwise, hey, there's some research about that. So let's talk about altruism and smell. And this is for the women of the group because it was conducted on women. There were 44 female university students. They were twice asked to smell three T-shirts and pick out the one that belonged to their roommate. Now, their roommate basically wore these T-shirts for 8 hours and was 2 days scent free of toiletries, so there was no way you were going to pick up that they used Secret or some other deodorant. Well, what happened was this, and again, way too much material on this slide. Of the 44, 13 of these young women picked out the correct T-shirts twice. They did it twice. And then they did another little experiment with this. They did a facial recognition experiment with all those women. And they found that those women who excelled in smell, and just, you know, you can train your nose, those women who excelled in smell were able to identify facial features, facial features, much better than those who did not have that good sense of smell. They were more empathetic toward people. So you can imagine sniffing your roommate's T-shirt close, or if you're really good 20 yards away, and you can say, boy, am I empathetic, and therefore probably more likely to be altruistic. We also know that a psychologist by the name, or psychiatrist, excuse me, by the name of Irvin Yalom, who is quite respected in the profession, found that altruism is one of 11 curative or therapeutic factors that contribute to the betterment of individuals and groups. He gave a number of factors, but altruism was one of the most important, and Yalom studies are hard data, number-crunching research, and altruism really plays an important part in our working in groups. If you wanted to know more, there is more, and that is that the United States and altruism. What do we find in our society? Well, unfortunately, we don't find as much as we might like in terms of altruism. Part of that may be that we're competitive, that we recognize personal success a lot, and that when that happens, it reduces the likelihood of cooperation and altruism. A study back in the 70s found only 8% of children 3 to 10, excuse me, in the United States were altruistic. Those studies have been replicated, and the numbers, unfortunately, don't get a lot better. So we don't have a lot to talk about in terms of being an altruistic society, even though we have many altruistic people. But that can change, and that can change with you, that can change with me, that can change with all of us being aware that we can make altruism more a part of our society than less of. Altruistic studies with teachers. Some of you are in education. Well, we know that that those teachers who are more altruistic, they do one of three things. First, they perceive the needs of other people. Second, they're motivated. And third, that is to address those needs. And third, they address the needs without any expectation of reward. If you expect a reward, you're in it for the wrong reason, and it's not altruistic behavior. But perceiving, motivating, and addressing action words that good teachers do in regard to working with students and being altruistic. We also know from another study, and you see all the documentation, way too much, you can tell I'm a college professor, that altruistic behavior in teachers that may increase if they model caring behavior, if they model caring behavior. So showing caring leads to caring much more than not. Altruism and empathy, well, they're related. A person's ability to empathize, the greater that ability is, the more likely they have the potential to be altruistic. That is, to be unselfish, to care for others more than to care for themselves. And again, that's crucial. And basically, the last of these slides on some of the studies, or next to the last, is that altruism is based and civilization, that human altruism is thought to be based in part on empathy, and civilization is based on that. So if we want to talk about a civilization that's strong and important and cares for its people, we're talking about a civilization where people learn to be altruistic and learn to be empathetic, and there are ways to teach people to do that, as we will discover. Basically, if you want to say to yourself, or if you're saying to yourself, self, I wonder how altruistic I am, well, there are ways to test that. And one of the ways, not the most scientific, but one of those ways, is through Psychology Today. Now, I have nothing against Psychology Today. It's a fine magazine. But basically, they have an altruistic test that takes you maybe 10 minutes and has 30 questions. And this question from that test, and the only one I'll show you, is kind of a scratch and win lottery ticket scenario where you basically scratch and win a lottery and a ticket, and you have $50 as a result. And then somebody who's poor and underprivileged and smelly approaches you and asks for $5 so that she can get a bowl of soup, something to eat. And basically your choices are saying, there's seven of them, ignore her, say I'm sorry, keep walking, fish in your pocket, get some change for her, pull out your wallet, give her $5. Anyway, give her more than $5, but leave a little cash for yourself because you've got a little money. Pull out your wallet and give her all the money, or tell her, I won't give her money, but I'll take her to a local diner and pay for the hot meal. I will not tell you the correct answer. I will let you take the test for yourself, but I will tell you, only to shore up my credentials for giving this talk, I took this test. And basically, I came out altruistic. Obviously, I may have cheated a little knowing I was going to do this test. No, I did not. But the long and short of this, I put Sam sometimes on the floor gladding basically to say that you can overdo altruism. You need to have you need to not neglect yourself, and you need to balance your altruistic tendencies with some self-care. So, what keeps us from being altruistic? Barriers to altruism. Boo. Let's talk about what those are. Okay? Well, one of those things is that it's easy to agree with altruism in principle, but it's harder to act altruistically on a number of occasions. Sometimes that means personal sacrifice. And sometimes people are either not in a position or really not willing to give some personal sacrifice in order to help someone. So it's an action. Action. It's kind of like acting, you know? Action. And so it's important to make sure that we're in a position to do that. The other thing that are several other things that are barriers are these. Just a real focus on individualism and materialism, and basically saying and idolizing wealth and status, that's going to get in the way of altruism. If you really want to be altruistic, you don't set up idols, if you will, of wealth and status. you basically say, hey, I want to serve people. I don't want to serve them just to be wealthy. I don't want to serve them just to have status. Another thing that can get in your way is staying cognitive. Mr. Spock, and I never can do my fingers the way he does his, but I don't know if you are Spock fans or not. Some of you can do it. I'm seeing you do it right now, and I'm really... May the force be with you, whatever. And if you'll teach me after this, I'd be very appreciative. But if you stay just cognitive, you're not going to do very well. You probably don't remember HAL 900, the computer in 2001. That's a fairly interesting movie of long ago and far away, but HAL was very much a cognitive computer. Another barrier to being altruistic is time. Time. They did a study on 200-year-old shipwrecks, the Lusitania and the Titanic, and they found that you would be much better to have been on the Titanic than the Lusitania. The Lusitania sank in 18 minutes, and the Titanic took 3 hours. Despite what you may have seen in the movie, women and children came out better in the Titanic than they did in the Lusitania. Part of it was the rush of time, of self-preservation, that got in the way of being altruistic, where it was every person for themselves and they were scrambling because the ship was going down so fast. But time, 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 and time again, it's important to remember that you need to give yourself enough time if you're going to be altruistic. It's not like that, a snap. It's more a process that takes time. Another thing that can get in your way is just kind of eschewing emotion. There's nothing wrong with Ayn Rand, but sometimes people don't look at, or they look at emotions as mushy and messy. Emotions are important in life. In fact, the most important decisions in life are usually made on an emotional rather than necessarily a cognitive basis. What you major in, where you go to school, who you marry, other things that occur in life, your faith experiences, those are many times much more emotional. In fact, E.E. Cummings has a little poem that says this. He says, since feeling comes first, those who pay attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you. That is, those who are so concerned with how they're going to kiss you will never really kiss you. And, you know, they're saying, well, do I lead with my upper lip or lower lip? and I won't even go into the other parts of what a kiss might be like. But basically, they're basically saying emotion. It's important. It comes first. Selfishness, I don't need to talk about Bart Simpson. You know Bart. And he's not a sweetheart. He's interested in himself, and selfishness will not get you very far. Just a couple of other quick things. Being blind to bad behavior. These are young women at the German concentration camp in World War II, Auschwitz, and they're relaxing and they're having a great time. The thing about these young women and when this photo was taken was 1944. And these women were eating blueberries and having a good time. They basically put themselves in a position of volunteering for the Reich at that time, which would be tragic as well as bad, in the sense that at that time they were to communicate, keep German communications open, while 400,000 Hungarian Jews were basically terminated at Auschwitz at that time. And they were they put themselves in a bad position. There were other things they could have done in life. And knowing what you're doing is important in how you live your life. Another thing that happens besides being blind to bad behavior is being blind to what you've been taught. I finished this presentation just a couple of days ago before Albert, the governor, the Schwarzenegger, came into prominence again. And basically for his behavior. But you see examples there of people who have been blind to what they've been taught. Tiger Woods with extramarital affairs, Mark Sanford the same way. Marion Jones basically taking drug-enhancing drugs to make her run faster and not really represent our country well or represent herself well, but being blind to what you've been taught. David DeStento, has a book of Out of Character, and he talks about how people make such bad decisions as Arnold Schwarzenegger and these who are on your screen. So you're saying to yourself, self, how about promoting altruism since we have 18 minutes left? How do we promote it? Well, if you're saying that to yourself, let's talk about that for a moment. Basically, look at the last line or last bullet point, on this particular slide. And that is, we learn altruism the same way we learn to speak, to read, to swim, or to ride a bicycle. We need somebody to teach us, and we need to practice. So it's not unlike other behaviors that make us more of who we are, but it's something that we have to focus on, to concentrate on. It doesn't just come to us in a goodly way. I don't own any stock in Liberty Mutual Insurance Company, but I love their commercial. And one of the things I love about it is that it has to do with basically learning how to lend a helping hand. So if I can do this right, whoops. Well, I didn't. Let's go back. Yeah, now we're going to do it. Let's do it close. You may have seen this commercial. It's interesting.
As your hands breaking free, I am holding on. I am holding on. As you have.
When it's people who do the right thing, they call it being responsible. When it's an insurance company, they call it Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
I'm not here to sell you insurance. But I like the commercial because it shows that altruism is contagious, that empathy is something that we can learn, and that if we model it, people can imitate it in a very good way. Who do we find as examples of that? All over the place. We find them Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa. We find people of this statue working for the good of others who've either been discriminated against or who are the poorest of the poor and can't help themselves. We find things even on television that are important. I don't have a stake in what news you watch, but we watch sometimes NBC Nightly News, and Brian Williams has a little segment on the end on making a difference. And what he does is point out good human acts of kindness toward others. And one of his stories, or one of the stories that, because I'm a dog lover and an animal lover and a tree lover, was on basically rough times, that is, helping dogs and owners stay together, and just about a person who went out of her way to raise money to help people who were down on their luck keep their pets in-house, buy them dog food, pay for their vet bills, etc. Brian Williams is not the only one who features these things, but I think it's important that people see these kind of stories. One of the better stories in the last few years. It's about Sarah Tuckalotsky, who I can never say her name. But basically, her team, Western Oregon, was playing Central Washington for a championship in Division II athletics. And she rounded first base. She hit a home run. She rounded first base, and she tore a ligament in her knee. Basically, the umpire said, and rightfully so, that if her coach, her teammates, her trainer were to touch her, she'd be out. So what happened here was that two young women on the Central Washington team picked her up, took her around the bases, touching each base, and basically scoring the winning run. It was a game. It wasn't something that would make that much difference somewhat in someone's life, except for the altruistic behavior these young women showed toward one another and helping someone who basically was helpless do something that they had earned. And it's another picture of them. Basically, the ESPY awards, they basically gave them that award for the way that they, their sportsmanship, and for what they did for one another. The end of the story is that the two young women who helped this other young woman, their team lost. But in losing, they were winners, because they were winners in life. And it made, as the French would say, a difference. I'll brush up on my French next time I come. In our final 12 minutes, let me tell you just a few more stories of altruism in real life. My guy basically is the person who hid the Frank family from June 12, 1942 to 1944. Anne Frank, we've all read about Anne Frank. And Anne Frank's wonderful quote is, "In spite of everything, I still believe that people really are good at heart." If you look at the person who hurt her, who helped her and helped that family, she had everything to lose, nothing to gain, but she knew it was the right moral thing to do. And she was empathetic with the family, altruistic interactions, and that made a large difference, a big difference for the world we live in today with the inspirational story of the Frank family and Anne. Melissa Poe is another person who I think represents real life in a very good way. She was a teenager in Nashville, Tennessee, and basically was concerned about the environment. She wrote then the President Bush, I think the second one, and basically said, "I'm interested in that." He wrote her back and said, "Don't do drugs." It was kind of a form letter. He wasn't being crass. But the long and short of it is she thought, "I really do want to do something about the environment." And so she formed a club called Kids Face, and this group has planted like a million trees since that time, about 12 years ago. She's married now, has a child of her own, and still works for the good of the environment. The interesting thing that relates to Rexburg, Idaho at this point is she got Walmart to sponsor it. And I know you have a Walmart here. I've seen it. But good for Walmart and good for Melissa Poe. Another act of altruism, act of behavior, Charlie Simpson, a seven-year-old, just started riding his bike around a local park asking people for donations. He gave the donations to the underprivileged. He raised like 100,000 pounds worth of donations just by riding his bike, just by being active, just by caring for others. Ways of promoting altruism? Well, we know that Hope for Haiti marathon and sing-along was important and really has helped that country. And we find singers from around the globe sometimes working to help, and certainly in the United States. the promotion of real life Japan and the tsunami that just happened. This is a story that's not the most important story that came out of that, because if you look at what came out of that, you see Japanese people helping Japanese people in a wonderful way, even when they didn't have much. But people just being concerned about animals, concerned about any living thing. Here they're rescuing a dog that was 2 miles out to sea. If they hadn't rescued the dog, the world wouldn't have known about it. But the fact is, they cared. They were caring for people, they were caring for animals, they were caring for the world. Another real-life example, Dave Sanderson. He was the last person out on the U.S. Airways plane crash in the Hudson. And basically, he put his own life at risk by trying to do the right thing in the right way and be altruistic and save other people's lives. And he's lived to tell about that and actually has worked to help those less fortunate than he. One of my favorite slides coming up is this one, Latter-day Saints. And that's a cleanup of tornadoes hit in the southern United States, where I happen to live. And the fact that the cleanup has been, again, voluntary. Nobody said, hey, come help us clean up. You guys came. And we're very grateful for that. And from Alabama to North Carolina to others, good show, as the Brits would say, good show. Who else came? Well, the Southern Baptists, Presbyterians, the Mennonites, Lutherans, Jews, but people of faith, people who had and were reinforced by their faith came to be altruistic and to help. Ways of being more altruistic, thinking and donating. You can play trivia online and basically provide rice for people who are hungry. And it's an interesting little concept. I've given the address right there. You can obviously give to American Red Cross or donate to Goodwill, Salvation Army, other groups, and that's important also. Role play. Some of you may be into acting or drama, but what do we know? We know from research that social skills training improves people's ability to empathize and improves their ability to be altruistic. So you can pretend. You can basically say, I'm just pretending to do this. But what it does, it infuses you with an ability to know what to do and how to do it. And so if you play it out, you're much more likely to act it out when that situation comes. Just a few more slides. If you're wondering to yourself, self, are there any sites on the World Wide Web that would help me be more altruistic or learn about altruism more? There are. I've listed five here, including Random Acts of Kindness, where it's a grassroots effort to, especially in K through 12 grades or in classrooms, those of you who might be going into elementary or secondary education or even college education, Random Acts of Kindness, where you learn about those efforts and resources that you can use to be more kind. Examples of heroism. We need more heroes and sheroes in the world. We really do, and there's a website that has those people listed. Characters, our Charter for Compassion. Again, site is worldwide, including many acts of compassion by citizens around the world. We're not unique in the United States, as we know, that it's a worldwide phenomenon of being altruistic, of being compassionate. And finally, things like the food bank. And my favorite is Give a Good Card. And basically, you go to the website, you make a donation, send you a card, and you give the card to somebody else, and they can give it to their favorite charity or organization, and they can be good as well as you're being good in the sense of being altruistic. A nice way to do it. Let me talk about just a couple of other things. Suffering, you may say to yourself, I'm not going to go through this that much, but you may say to yourself, does suffering ever improve your ability to be empathic, to be altruistic? And the answer is, without explaining all of it, yes, it does. Yes, it does. That you can learn from those adversities that you've had in life and be all the better for it. Philanthropy also can be something that can be used to activate altruism and to be more altruistic. A lot of times people become selfish when they become rich or whatever, but philanthropy doesn't have to be that way, and wealth doesn't have to be that way. Basically inspired by Warren Buffett and Bill and Melinda Gates, a number of billionaires, literally billionaires, have basically made a pledge to donate the majority of their wealth to charity in their estate plans. Good for them and good for the world in what they're doing. So as we're closing out in these last 4 minutes, let me give you just a little bit more. You can also obviously sing about it as well as act about it. I'm your buckaroo, Rodney Atkins song. The last lines, I want to do everything you do, so I've been watching you. People are always watching us, whether they're our buckaroos or not, whether we wear cowboy boots. If you're saying to yourself, but I'd rather be just a little passive and yet be altruistic, you can do it. You can do it. One thing you can do is grow your hair. And basically, then after you get 10 inches, you can give it to Locks of Love. One of my children does this, and although he sometimes wanders in the wilderness, otherwise he focuses in on this, and I'm proud of him for doing that. But you can also set up your bank account where it's almost painless, where money's donated to your favorite charity or to a child. Passive behavior, you can watch TV, the Care Bears, Barney, Sesame Street. You're a little beyond that. Okay, but just in case. Things that stress similarities, not differences, very important in altruism. That is, if you turn on the TV, and all too often we turn on the TV and we find that they're being a bit divisive, turn off the TV or blow it up or something. But don't go there. Don't go there. We find that people are much more likely to be altruistic if there is something that is stressing similarities rather than differences, as again the French might not say. reflecting, giving people meals, important. As Clint Black says in the song Something We Do, that just like love, altruism is something that we do. It's not just something we think about. Finally, let me end this as we end our last minute and be on time, like the trains in Germany and Japan, by giving you one last or two last snapshots of the future of altruism. There's a person by the name of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was both an archaeologist and a priest, who basically studied in what he called the rise of spirit or evolution of consciousness in the universe. He believed that that it's observable and verifiable in a simple law that he called the law of complexity consciousness. The law simply states that it's an inherent compulsion in matter to arrange itself in more complex groupings, to exhibit a higher level of consciousness. And the main focus of Teilhard de Chardin's emphasis was that as human beings evolve, become more of who we could be, who we are, that we will converge in knowing and appreciating the ultimate, if you will, God, more than we have before, and be better yet than we are. He inspired a novelist or a short story writer by the name of Flannery O'Connor, who wrote one of her books that everything that rises must converge. And that was actually part of his saying, that everything that rises must converge. And that if we are true to trying to be better yet than we are, more than we are, to study how we can be better and to break down barriers to altruism, the world will be better, we will be better, and that we may really make this earth a place of peace, of empathy, and a place that's a great place to live. And I know you're doing that here at BYU, Idaho. And what we need now is just get the world to do it, right? So anyway, thank you for letting me be here with you. And I wish you the very best, because we're 1 minute over time. And so thank you.